All right. Good afternoon. My name is Jared Barnes. I'm a professor of horticulture at Stephen F. Austin State University. Today I'm going to be talking about a project that we did, evaluation of genetic diversity and stability of Colocasia cultivars using ISSR. This is a project that my graduate student, Suk, did. Myself and my colleague, Michael Maurer, provide sort of the horticultural background on this project. Dr. B. Clack works at SFA, and she runs the biotechnology lab. And then Dr. Yu Wang, he actually helped us with a lot of the statistical analysis of the data that we got from this. Okay, so if you know elephant ear, you know that it not only is an ornamental plant, but it's also an edible plant as well, too. It's called taro. It's used, I think it's the 14th most edible crop in the entire world. The name comes from, of course, the fact that it looks a little bit like an elephant ear, the sagittate leaf there does. So a lot of people like to eat it around the world, but they also like the ornamental use as well, too, that this crop offers. What we see, though, is when we look at plants within the horticulture trade, there's a lot of diversity that exists. They're very, very highly polymorphic for color, shape, size, and also secondary metabolites as well, too. So a couple of years ago, I applied for a grant to start a Colocasia trial at SFA, and we've been running it now. This is now in its third year collecting data, trying to figure out which cultivars would be best for the Southeast. And when you walk out there, you really get to see and appreciate a lot of the diversity that exists. We have speckled leaves, short, tall. We have waxiness. We have dull coloration. We have some plants that have purple, red, white, and green in the leaf color. So we had a lot of plants out there for Suk to work with. As far as why we decided to do this project, one thing is once Suk got into the literature, he found that there is a diminishing genetic diversity of taro and Colocasia out there. We also don't know a lot about the diversity that exists within the horticultural trade, that there's been studies to go and analyze Colocasia that occur in the native population areas, but there's not really been an assessment of the cultivars that exist within the trade. So we decided to do genetic characterization using PCR and ISSR. As far as the benefits of doing this project, we would definitely be able to get a sense of what genetic diversity exists out there, and then that information could be used as a reference for breeders and growers as well, too, into the future. So just a brief overview of the materials and methods, sample prep, and then we did DNA isolation quantification, PCR, ISSR, gel electrophoresis, and then, of course, final, last but not least, but also statistical analysis. In our Colocasia trial garden, we've been able to accumulate 44 different cultivars of Colocasia within the trade. We had initially a list of about 64, but some of those have fallen off within the trade. A couple of the ones that also were introduced at some point in time in the industry, once they got them into tissue culture, they weren't very stable, and so we did not grow those as well either, because a lot of those have been taken off the market. As far as these cultivars go, we did no assessment of the ploidy levels, but we know that there are both diploid and triploid plants out there in the market. We collected young tender leaves in November 2016. These were then stored in negative 80 degrees Celsius fridge. Okay, for the DNA isolation quantification, Suk ordered and used the DNEZ Power Plant Pro Kit, which basically goes through, lyses the cells, and then eventually you're able to go through and remove some of the other contents of those leaves from there. We use the spectrophotometer, Cary-15, for DNA quantification, and then to analyze purity, we use 260 nanometers of UV light for DNA, and then we looked at the ratio of 260 to 280 for purity of that DNA within there. Of course, PCR, ISSR, we use this to amplify random unique genomic regions in between two microsatellites. Initially, Suk came up with a list of about 14 primers that he was considering using, but eventually he whittled these down to about 8. Based on some of the research and stuff that he saw, he felt that these 8 would really help us accomplish a lot for looking at the DNA analysis. A lot of these markers are also dominant DNA markers, so they will mark whether or not you have both dominant alleles present or a dominant and a recessive. For staining the DNA, we use ethidium bromide. We then ran this through electrophoresis. And then once we did this, he used the Typhoon FLA 9500 scanner to go through and image the different bands from the electrophoresis. Each locus that occurred for each cultivar was recorded as a 1 or a 0. And then with working with Dr. Wang, Suk figured out that probably the three tests and analysis that would give us the best statistical results from analyzing this data were to go through and look at the unweighted pair group method with arithmetic mean, UPGMA, also principal coordinate analysis, and then also Shannon's diversity index as well too. And we used a multivariate statistical package to go through and analyze this data. All right, and if you want to know more about these, I've got a couple slides at the end, so if you've got any questions, I just moved them to the end for a little bit of sake of time. All right, for results and discussion, what we found is that each cultivar that we had out there in the Colocasia trial garden, each one exhibited a distinct banding pattern, which is good. No one's like stolen a cultivar from someone else in the industry, which is great, right? We had 5 reps within the cultivar trial garden, so Suk took a sample from each rep, so we had 5 reps for each clone, and what he saw was that there was an identical banding pattern among clones. If you go look at his thesis, you'll see that occasionally one of the bands didn't appear, but he went back, reran the DNA analysis, and that band reappeared. We also saw that there was a high polymorphism of DNA across these 44 cultivars that we assessed. Okay, for UPGMA, we were able to build the tree doing this analysis. What we noticed just right off the bat was that no distinct groups were formed from this. Overall, when you looked at the DNA across the Colocasia cultivars that we trialed, we had a similarity of about 30%. And when we looked at pairs, group pairs between the different cultivars, what we saw is that the similarity ranged from anywhere from 0.07 to about 0.62. And so we're not seeing very strong similarity, very, very close similarity between a lot of the different cultivars that are being tested. The most similar cultivar pair that we had was Colocasia esculenta limonade and Colocasia esculenta limonade. Those had the similarity index of 0.618. Another thing, too, is I heard this through personal communication with Tony Avent and a few others, is that evidently there's been some effort to reclassify some of these giant leaf Colocasia into a different genus. But what we saw is that the large cultivars here, Thailand giant, Laosi giant, and Maximus giganti, all grouped together. And they also are sort of nestled within this Colocasia family here. And so it makes us think that they probably shouldn't be segregated out. Yes, they are morphologically different, but what we see is that Colocasia do have a lot of polymorphism, and so it's probably just that they have really, really big growth, very high vigor, etc. They probably shouldn't be separated out into a different family. Okay, so for UPGMA, we built a similarity index matrix, and then the most similar pair of the cultivar was grouped together first, so 32 and 34, limonade, limonade. And then once we did this, we then looked at the distance between this pairing and the rest of the cultivars were then recalculated from that. We then grouped the most similar cultivars and groups together, and we then this averaging similarity was then repeated from there on out. So this is the tree that we were able to build. Suk, whenever he put this presentation together, he circled a couple of things. One thing that he circled is up here you see this grouping of the Colocasia gigantea or gigantea-derived cultivars. So there's Laosi giant, Maximus gigantea, and Thailand giant up there. You can see that they're kind of nestled in with some of these other cultivars up here. And so, again, we don't think that they should be their own separate genus. They're probably just showing polymorphism, high vigor, amount of vigor there. He also circled a couple of the ones that had a high similarity index. You can see limonade, limonade here, and I'll talk about a couple more of these here in just a second as well, too. So these were 7 of the most similar cultivar combinations that we have up here. Limonade, limonade, Big Dipper and Bikini Teeny, Coffee Cups and Coal Miner, Red-Eyed Gecko, Rhubarb, illustrious imperial gigante, which to me this one was interesting because illustrious is of course Colocasia antiquorum. It has a little bit different background than a lot of the other esculenta varieties. And imperial gigante is a very large one, so maybe the breeder used some of that antiquorum background there to breed into that. And then of course painted black gecko, morning dew, and violet stem, and tropical storm. We put a picture up here of these two cultivars, Limeade and Lemonade, that had this similarity index of 0.62. So you can just kind of see that, yes, they do have some overall similarities that you can see. Similar height, similar leaf shape and size. But you can see here this one has a little bit more of a waxy coloration to the leaf. This one over here is a little bit duller, and it has these little spots as well, too, isolated in different parts of the leaf as well, the sort of mosaic pattern that some of these offer. Okay, when we looked at principal coordinate analysis, what we saw is that 12.2 of the variation was observed in two principal components. And what we really saw from this is that no clear groups really popped out to us whenever we analyzed this Colocasia data. And that makes sense, right? We're going through and we're assessing 44 different cultivars that are in the horticulture industry that have been bred by people around the world or discovered in the wild. And so these are different plants coming from different backgrounds. So it makes sense that you're not going to have very distinct groups form within these cultivar assessment. When we looked at those top seven cultivars that I mentioned to you a second ago, they do maintain somewhat of a short distance within this PCO scatter graph that you see up here. If you want to look at this a little bit more in detail, you can find Suk's thesis online. It's already posted online on our university's websites. But these seven groups do maintain sort of a short distance within themselves. But what you see is that there's really no strong clustering or grouping that forms within this principal coordinate analysis. Last but not least, we looked at the Shannon's Diversity Index. Of course, it's used to evaluate diversity within ecology. Well, we can also use it to examine diversity within alleles as well, too. We found that it was 0.44 for all the cultivars. This number was higher than some of the research that's been done in the past, or it was similar to other research that's been done with Colocasia. And what we saw is that this number was a little bit higher or similar to some of the other research that's been done on other species like Lilium or Rosa as well, too. So we have a fairly strong amount of, or moderate amount of diversity that exists already within the Colocasia pool of cultivars that are out there. And so the reason that this is great is because that means that already within the cultivar pool that exists, there's a high amount of diversity that we can use to try to potentially develop new cultivars. And so we observed high gene pool, and of course that means that we may have more options to work with. We may not necessarily have to go out into the wild look for new germplasm. We already have a strong amount of diversity that exists. Acknowledgements. Dr. Young was actually the person who was trying to find Suk a project at SFA, and he passed away about 3 months into this project, and so if it hadn't been for him, he wouldn't have brought us all together. Two of my students, John Dilday and Chanel Angini. Chanel was another graduate student that helped us collect data, and then Marcus Algeria helped Suk a lot in the lab. So with that, I'll take any questions you might have. Yes, ma'am. Possibly, definitely. Suk was in a little bit of a time crunch because he had to return to South Korea to potentially participate in the military draft. And so we had to work things. I agree with you, if we had more markers. And he started out initially wanting to do 14, but with things that went on during his master's, and he was a great student. I mean, like, he basically started this in December and finished it in October. So, I mean, like, he was on fire, you know, but he did a lot of great work.
Since it looked like there were, like, four, maybe five species that are included in here.
Sure.
Did it segregate, which seems really surprising to me. Mm-hmm.
Possibly, I don't know, but that's a really good question. I think that, you know, since Antiquorum, Esculenta, and Gigantea are the three that have been said to be used a lot, but it could be that in other parts of the world that, yeah, that you've had some of that interspecific hybridization. And if I remember correctly, it's been a while since I've read it, but Suk has a really nice introduction that goes into a lot of the Colocasia background and where they're found in like Malaysia and Papua New Guinea and other areas. So if you want, Ryan, I can email you that or shoot me an email and I'll be happy to share that with you.